Hi, Terry Ward here. I write those Eye on Art radio essays, and I'm the wall czar of the public radio art space. Artists who hope to exhibit at WMRA need to get through me. About a year ago, I needed to give a diplomatic gift of good beer, so I dropped in on the wine and craft beer shop in downtown Harrisonburg's Court Square Theater building. Perched way atop the shelves were exquisite paintings. Realistic oils of jug band players and blues men, family fiddlers, gramophone gatherers, all with a kind of Bayou Maxfield Parrish atmosphere. Impressive, nearly photographic realism in places, but artfully smudging away in the distance. The paintings have their own little atmospheres, it seems like. A layer of humidity, or night air, or nostalgia, or something. Painterly and yet totally believable depictions of lanterns and candles. Possibly the best ever depiction in paint of fiddle strings, which are actually darn hard to paint. The shopkeeper was kind enough to share a card. Todd Kenton Yoder, illustrations, paintings. Well, that's pretty understated. I was really knocked out. These exquisite gems atop the wine racks. And that became one of very, very few times where I invited an artist to come show at the Public Radio Art Space. Martha Woodruff had a talk with the artist.
I have found quite a number of visitors to WMRA just standing in front of your paintings. What do you think they're seeing? What's getting them stuck?
Oh, geez.
Not fair.
That is not fair. I guess I could preface the answer to that with an anecdote. One of my favorite professors from grad school, he was just this amazing, amazing illustrator. And he started the first class I ever had with him with an illustration of a ball perched on top of a triangle, I think, or at the edge of a table, something like that, and asked us what we thought it meant or something to that effect. And the point of the demonstration, I guess, was that it created tension for us, and that kind of flowed into him saying that you have to make the viewer take the first step and be drawn to the work. And I guess that was just his work ethic in the creative process to create something that, you know, really grabs the viewer upon first glance. I mean, you know, I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Let me ask you this. You're a visual artist.
Yeah.
And I'm asking you to talk about your visual art, and you're struggling. Is this, yeah, don't shake, you can't
yes.
shake your head on
Sorry.
The radio.
Yes.
Does part of you want to say, Martha, just look at it. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
This is going to be a really short interview, isn't it?
That's what I was afraid of.
All right, stop.
Okay.
Let's talk about your history with your paintbrush. Were you a doodling six-year-old, or how did
yeah.
this start?
I always was a doodler, always drawing in church, always drawing in school. I got great grades, but I had to keep my hand and my eyes occupied because I just could not focus on the board for that long. So oftentimes I would draw what was being taught. So as not only a distraction, but a memory aid, if I could internalize it and draw it at the same time, it would stick with me, especially when it got down to, you know, studying outside of class, which is, I think, where I did most of my learning because I was drawing all day. But it worked. And from there, I think, you know, a couple teachers saw what I was doing and they were okay with it. Well, elementary and high school.
Okay, so you were precocious.
And, you know, a couple teachers would make note of it and say, oh, you need to be paying attention. But they saw what I was drawing and, you know, they didn't really bat an eye because they knew that I was getting the work done.
Where were you in school? Sounds like a good school system.
Here. Oh, I went to Lyndall Edom Elementary School.
All right.
And then I went to Eastern Mennonite High School for high school. But, you know, especially the math classes. I'm not good at math. And, you know, I was always drawing. But I had one geometry teacher who was just a huge fan of my work. And every homework assignment paper had some form of art on it. And she was just super proud of that, which was great, you know. when you're doing something you shouldn't be doing but are getting praised for it. And from there on, you know, I took art classes, obviously, because I wanted to. It just kind of developed from there. Lots of sketching, and I think that's where the realism kind of planted its feet. I did this drawing of an old man. It was the first drawing of a photograph I think I did, and it turned out really well, and I just love being able to capture those nuances of character and the detail that you can get in the human face. And
you keep using your hands, curling your hands in the human hand?
Yeah, the face and hands are the most important parts of, I guess, expressing either in a drawing or a painting. You know, you always look at the head and the hands. And I just love being able to express that in works of art, I guess. There are moments that I see in people that you don't normally see. These kind of little idiosyncrasies of something deeper or something more emotive underneath the surface. And it's moments like that that I really want to just latch onto and try to portray that in a more accessible way, I guess, to viewers, because I love those moments or those little kind of flukes of character.
Is your gift being able to see those moments or being able to get them down on the page or a combination?
I think it's more getting them on the page. You know, I think most people could recognize those things. I'm a very observant person. I'm pretty shy, so I spend a lot of my time soaking up what goes on around me. And that's, you know, where I find a lot of wonder, I guess you could say, in the world. And that's what I really am passionate about creating.
The sort of wonder in the life of everyday people?
Yes.
Okay.
And things.
You did a series of pictures. They're various music scenes.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, can you describe that series and then tell us where it came from?
Yes. That series was my graduate thesis project. I went to the Academy of Art University in San Francisco, and, you know, we had to do this thesis project. And there are illustrations from a story that I'm still kind of polishing out. Hopefully it will be in book form at some point, but there's also some illustrations that I still haven't fleshed out. But there,
story as in words as well as,
yes,
pictures?
And there's actually a musical component to that as well.
The triple threat we are,
yeah,
talking to.
Where it came from, when I was trying to think of what I was going to do for my thesis proposal, I was all over the map. At first, I thought I was going to do something animal related because I love, you know, all things natural and the natural world. I was living in the Upper Haight, and I was just going through these shops. I think I was looking for some kind of candles or something. But well, I was in this shop, and they were playing Utah Phillips,
mm-hmm,
Loafer's Glory.
Oh, yeah. Our sister station, WEMC, carried Utah Phillips' program, I think, until it went out of production. And it was great.
Yeah, I was always really drawn to it. So I heard this in this shop, and it kind of hit me like, oh, I'm away from this kind of Shenandoah Valley environment that I've grown up in all my life. And, you know, the grass is always greener, but as soon as you get there, like move to San Francisco, I just realize there's so much rich history and music in that part of the country, you know, Appalachia and just that area. And I realized, well, that would be great because it's where I'm from, and, you know, it's being away from it made it so much more appealing all of a sudden, or I overlooked it or didn't appreciate it fully, I guess, while there. So hearing Loafer's Glory just kind of sealed the deal, and from there I built.
Describe Loafer's Glory in case people are,
okay,
familiar.
Utah Phillips was, I guess you could call him a legitimate hobo, folk singer, songwriter, storyteller, most importantly. And the program just chronicled his kind of walk through life in that lifestyle. And you just get so entranced by his stories and the music that goes with it and the people that he meets along the way. And I drew a lot of inspiration from that. Just a great, great show, because the hobo way of life is so, it seems romantic, but I know there's so much, not only danger, hopping trains is extremely dangerous. I should have mentioned that. There's that involved as well. But what's the word I'm looking for?
The downside of it? The dark side of
it? Yeah,
I
think there is a dark side to it, which is also kind of intriguing to me. I don't really get into that in my story, but I was definitely drawn to the dark side of that. I don't know.
And it's lonely.
Yeah, definitely. There's a song, Hobo's Lullaby. I was at a concert at the Little Grill probably a year before I actually moved out to San Francisco. And Anais Mitchell, I don't know, she's a folk singer. I don't know if you've heard of her, but she sang this song, Hobo's Lullaby, and it just, you know, punched me in the gut. And I just got this image of this hobo on a train and just the sorrow and the freedom, that kind of, you know, that dichotomy that goes with that way of life. And I just thought, how could I, you know, do this in a painting?
Slowly, boy, can't you hear the steel rails humming? That's a hobo's lullaby.
I was inspired to do a painting of it then, but I just kind of tucked it away. Mm-hmm. And then after hearing the Utah Phillips, I was like, oh man, this is, why hadn't I thought of this before, you know? I need to elaborate on this.
And so there was your thesis.
Yeah. And from that point, I thought, well, who could I use for this? Because I want to have, you know, this be as realistic as possible. I want to get models and stuff. And right away, I thought of the friends here in the Valley who are musicians. And, you know, they specialize in this kind of old time bluegrass and folk music. And they can play and they look the part. So I just used them and as inspiration and for aesthetic, you know. So I took photographs of them, obviously, but everything you see in there, I took pictures of or created out of my head.
I've got one of your paintings.
Yes.
That's hanging at WMRA. Now, just tell me the story of this painting.
Well, there are four figures, the three main characters. They are in a bar down south. I think this is in, they're in Memphis at this point. And they meet this blues man, harmonica player, who's standing in the foreground with a knee raised, leaning over, playing harmonica while smoking a cigarette, looking at the protagonist of the story, who's looking at him, and in the background are the other two hobos enjoying as well. And in the background, there's some people drinking and enjoying themselves. And there's, yeah, smoke-filled barroom with lots of little lights. And
what is this? What medium are you using? And what's it painted on?
It's oil paint. It's on Masonite board that you can buy at the hardware store. It's actually a thicker version, but the textures you get in the background and, well, all over the painting really is, it's just gesso. It's how I treat it. I like to get that kind of texture underneath the surface with a preliminary brushing of gesso. And then over top of that, I do the drawing and then paint very thin layers of oil paint.
I was going to say, there's no globs of paint or brush strokes, and that's from very thin layers?
Yeah. I guess the thickest gets in the faces and the lights. You can actually see the paint build up. But yeah, it's a technique that was used a lot in the 80s in the illustration world, where you basically are brushing over large areas of a drawing with very thinned out oil paint. So it's terpenoid and mostly terpenoid with a little bit of pigment. And when it dries to a certain degree, you can go in with a kneaded eraser and pull out the lights. So you're left with the darks and you can render that way to a certain extent. And then from there, you wait till it dries, do it again, and you can build up this really kind of translucent effect. And then obviously in the focal points, you go in with a little bit thicker paint and kind of build up the faces where you don't want a whole lot of texture showing through. But yeah, it's very thin.
And then the lights in this seem to have the absolute thickest. They're like shining mm-hmm. through, not just your, to the person, to me, looking at this, they're shining through the smoke.
Yeah. And yeah, in order to get that kind of brilliance, illuminance, mm-hmm. You have to almost give it texture because it gives it not only a bit of a 3D surface, which you wouldn't think would make that big of a difference. But when I did it, it automatically just shot out because you get a little bit of shadow from the paint daub. But also you need, you know, as pure a white as you can get so that when you go over it with that kind of orange haze, it really just lights up and kind of comes out at you.
It pops.
Yeah.
You talked about these as illustrations mm-hmm. for a book someday. Is this, as it stands propped up on my knees in its frame, is this a painting or an illustration?
I knew you were going to ask that question.
Because I work in public radio?
Yes. It depends on who you ask.
I'm asking you.
Okay. I don't think I know the answer to that yet. I'm still learning.
You care?
Do I care?
Mm-hmm.
No.
No.
Not really.
Todd Yoder will give an informal gallery talk about his paintings at the WMRA Harrisonburg Studios on Thursday, February 23rd at 5:30. Please join him, Terry, me, and who knows who else for coffee and conversation.